broadcasting from Nashville Guitar Store in the heart of Music City, USA. Bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. Sharing tales of their history, discussing guitars, their gear, their work, what's on tap for the future, and delivering wisdom we'll all appreciate. Your host is Marcia Ware Wilder, nationally recognized radio personality, singer, actor, and author.
All right, our guest today is... I'm just so excited. Of course, I'm excited pretty much every time I'm in the presence of greatness, and Deddy Giosa is no exception. He has played with everyone from Yolanda Adams to Crystal Gayle, Frank Zappa's Chester Thompson, Phil Keaggy. I'm telling you, your list is expansive, your resume is impressive, and you are truly a welcome guest on this podcast.
Wow, thank you. That's kind of you. Thanks.
Well, I know how to butter up men, so it's not a big deal. All right. Well, you know, we like to start pretty much where you got started, Huntington, Indiana. Now, I think what's interesting, according to Wikipedia, and if it's in Wikipedia, it's probably true, Dan Quayle and Mick Mars of Motley Crue. Oh. Are both from Huntington, Indiana.
Yeah, I didn't know he was from Huntington, though.
Yeah.
Dan Quayle.
Yeah.
I know Dan, so yes, I know of that. I mean, Huntington, Indiana, right outside of Fort Wayne, for people who don't happen to know where that is. It's just like a half hour from Fort Wayne, Indiana. So,
what kind of music life, if any, was there?
There wasn't much. You know, I had my first band and started taking lessons. And I went to my mom and said, I want to put a band together. So she looked at me and she smiled and she said, you might want to learn to play an instrument first.
And you so, gotta love moms.
Boy, she was my number one believer, I can tell you that.
That's awesome.
So Dad had an old acoustic guitar around the house that was in really bad shape, and I kind of started on that. And then they bought me an electric and an amp at W.T. Grant Company for like $29.95. You know, it was a really good one. And
now, do you have either of those?
I do have the guitar.
Really?
I still have the guitar, and I have these pictures that back in those days, they took a lot of slides.
Yeah.
You know, slides were popular, and I have slides of me so happy in the pose with that guitar, and I'm going to use that. I have another record I have on my mind, a concept record that I want to use that for. But I had my first band when I was 12, and playing publicly when I was 14.
That is
and
amazing.
I have that recording on a cassette, if you can believe it.
Yes.
And you know, it's just, so I studied what I could there and went to school at Anderson University to study Anderson, Indiana.
It's my alma mater.
Is it really?
Paroled in 89. I mean, graduated in 89. And the world gets smaller.
It does get smaller.
I love it.
I did 1 year there. I wanted to get a background in engineering and production as well.
Right.
And it was the only college at that time offering anything near that.
Yes.
And so I worked at...
Pinebrook?
Well, Pinebrook, I knew the guys there at Burlap Sound.
Oh, yes.
You remember Burlap Sound?
I remember Burlap Sound. Sung
Burlap
a couple
Sound,
times, yeah.
And I hung out there, and Sandy Patty was coming in singing demos and
Heck
stuff.
Heck yeah.
And so, really, the only reason I went, no offense to anyone, is the fact they offered that class.
Yeah.
And there was no one else doing that. So I stayed for a year, hung out in the studio more than I did in class, and left, and then went to Purdue for a minute, and then left there and went on the road. And traveled and played with, you know, Danny and the Juniors and the Coasters and the Belmonts. And I was doing a tour with a guy from Huntington. Here's a guy named Troy Shondell that was from Huntington that had a number one hit in 1963 called This Time. And I ended up playing for Troy. And so I got to meet and play with all these other folks that I'm mentioning to you. You know, we were doing shows and touring. And it was great. It was a great experience. And then I was tired of that and moved to L.A.
So, we'll get to LA in just a second.
Okay.
But while you're 12 and 14 and doing the band thing locally, who were you listening to back then? Was there anybody that you were inspired by who's playing? It's like you're listening and you're thinking, I want to make that sound.
Well, believe it or not, even in those days, as young as I was buying jazz records and listening to Joe Pass, Howard Roberts, and then a little later on, Lee Ritenour came on the scene, and of course, Larry Carlton, and I was an absolute, you know, I love Larry. It's crazy because now I know these guys.
Right, they're your peers, they're your friends. Yeah,
it's just crazy, just like Phil Keaggy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I had my band when I was in my teens, and Phil was playing, and I'm like, this guy, you know, he was an inspiration. Here I am working with him, producing his record. A little later on, I was still in my teens, Santana was a massive influence to me and Clapton. And I will tell you, I am more of a heart listener than I am a technique listener.
Right. That's good. Go.
I respect very much players like John McLaughlin and Al Di Meola and those guys. I respect them very much for what they're able to do. But I don't want to get personal, but that doesn't move my heart.
Understood.
When I want to feel something. Yeah. And when I hear Santana or Clapton or Jeff Beck play one note in the right place, I go, oh my goodness. Tears come to my eyes. That's something magical happening there. The technique thing, they've got a technique. It's just different than everybody's different. You know? So
L.A., were you stranger in a strange land, or did you feel like you kind of jumped into the flow of that?
I was a stranger to strange land.
How long were you out there?
I was out there 3.5 years, and my school, I went to GIT, and this was back in the day when it was still down on Hollywood Boulevard, Howard Roberts was still living, and so I got to meet Howard and Joe DiOrio, and Robin Ford was coming in.
Robin Ford.
I love Robin's playing, too, and he's here in town now, it was an amazing time in my life, but L.A. just didn't agree with me, I'll be honest with you. I guess maybe it was small town boy couldn't handle it. I don't know, but I had a lot happen, too, after I moved out there. I had to come back home. I lost my mother during that time, and so that knocked the wind out of my sails pretty good, you know. And I just decided at that time I'd had enough and wanted to get a little closer. Dad was still living. My sister's still in Fort Wayne, and I wanted to get closer to home.
Well, so. I would think that those are things, especially if you've kind of classified yourself as a feel player rather than a technique player, that it's more of the personal stuff, more that feeds you as an artist. Would that be a fairly safe assessment?
It's a very safe assessment. To be honest with you, I've never been driven by the fame card so much. It's like, I've got to be famous. I've got to, you know, the stardom thing. It's always been, I've just felt like this is what God put on me to do, is to play music. Mm-hmm. And when you feel like you want to do that at 6 years old, that's all I ever thought about. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that that's where I belonged. And the stardom thing was, you know, I'm fairly popular, I guess. I mean, people know who I am, and I'm flattered by that, and I love it, and I'll always stop and talk to anybody and do a picture and whatever. I love it. I do. Yeah. I love it. But it's not what I'm driven by. I'm driven by communicating and touching people with my music. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do.
Being one of the things that we really strive to do through these podcasts is to speak to that person who is picking the guitar up, whether they're 6 or 60, but they just want to, the dedication to your craft. Forgive me if this sounds like a trite question, but I'm not sure any other way to ask it. What is do you have any secret to the dedication to the craft? Is there anything like, we all have moments when, one of my favorite lines in Almost Famous is when he said, hey, we got into this to avoid responsibility. I think about the average musician that I mean, being on the road, having been on the road myself, having worked with other musicians. I mean, there's that natural talent, and then there's that, even though you're not a technician, you are more of a field player, there still has to be a level of dedication to the craft.
I study all the time.
Yeah.
I still study. I just, a couple of years ago, went to Philly to take a lesson from Pat Martino, who's one of my heroes and friends. So, I mean, listen, the minute you think you know it all in music, somebody better slap you. Because music is a journey, and you never will know it all. There's always something new to create and discover.
Amen.
Always.
Amen.
The passion is what keeps me going. I mean, I have to be honest. If I'm having a rough day, if I have a headache, if I go into my studio and plug in and play, mm-hmm. in 5 minutes I'm feeling better. Yeah. There's something that I just had this discussion yesterday with a friend. Mm-hmm. There's something unexplainable about music and mm-hmm. what it does to our souls.
Amen. I believe it.
You can't put your finger on it. You can't figure it out. But there's something that happens there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I told him, if you don't believe that, watch a movie. Mm-hmm. And turn the music off when the music's happening and see what happens. Because music is used to manipulate our mm-hmm. feelings, to bring feelings to the top,
yeah.
you know. And that's why minor keys are sad. You know what's coming when you hear
yeah.
that music?
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
But it does make you feel a certain way.
Yeah.
Certain keys make you feel a certain
yeah.
way. Certain modes that
yes.
you play in make you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
There's something unexplainable about that. And that's, I love that.
I love that too. That is a brilliant way of putting it. Always remain a student, because it helps you in your ability to communicate, in your beauty, in your ability to be that feel.
Yeah,
feel player.
Life is a journey, and it's a learning one, that's for sure.
Amen, amen. I love that. So, when did you actually realize, this is kind of taking a step back, but when did you actually realize as you were coming up and you got B.B. King signing your paper and you got your mom telling you, learn to play an instrument, when did you actually think, you know what, I think I could make a living from this?
Well, growing up, and another friend of mine, he says it's that Midwest conditioning. And you grow up thinking you have to have the job and the security, quote unquote, and the insurance and all the benefits. Mm-hmm. You've got to have that to take care of your family. And I fought a lot against that and for the music, but mm-hmm. also felt like maybe I do need that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you kind of play into that. I mean, it's a conditioning thing. So that's part of the reason I went to school and thought, well, let me learn production and engineering, how mm-hmm. to run a console, mm-hmm. you know, because I was already good with that. I was mm-hmm. tearing radios and TVs apart when I was a kid and getting electrocuted and all that stuff, you know, learning about how things work, sound mm-hmm. worked, and studying electronics. So I went to get into production thinking, well, I can fall back on that
yeah.
and still be involved in creating
mm-hmm.
music.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally, after I went to GIT, after I decided to go for that, I knew that I had to go for, mm-hmm. it's just, what's my calling? It's the only thing that makes me happy,
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
know?
I get it. So let's switch gears to talk about gear. You had mentioned how you take things apart and put things together, and it just got me thinking about gear. I noticed on your website, geosa.com, thank you very much, you have quite a few endorsements. And you've got all these different companies, and you've got quite a few endorsements. Nice, healthy list of them.
Yes.
Would you say that you're kind of a gearhead?
I am a gearhead. I'm a tone freak, as they call me.
Ah.
I mean, I actually go around to schools and clinics, do clinics at stores, and mm-hmm. talk about achieving tone. It's mm-hmm. one of my things that I just am such a believer in. You know, I've heard great
yeah.
players
yeah.
that can play all the right notes, mm-hmm. but their tone is atrocious,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and I just, it's like, oh, please, let me yeah. help you there. And I just went to Belmont University here mm-hmm. and did a clinic on that, and
yeah.
It's always a very popular clinic. I go every couple of years, so it's a different class, and
mm-hmm.
Without a doubt, emails, questions come in afterwards,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's, yeah. So yes, I am, and I appreciate fine instruments and fine gear.
What is your basic setup on stage?
There are three amps that I'm quite fond of. You
mm-hmm.
know, I still do use Mesa Boogie quite a bit.
Okay.
I've always gone for that fatter, warmer tone.
Okay.
I've always been a humbucker, the gearheads out there will know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Humbucker pickup is like what's in a Les Paul, most Les Pauls, gotcha. And in a single coil is what's in most Fender Stratocaster. That's a very generic definition for you. Okay, now I'm with you. But I've always kind of liked that smokier, darker tone. In fact, even when I was a kid, you go back to those days. When I was listening to jazz, I would turn the tone back on my guitar and go for that dark, smoky sound. I just like that. That Clapton called it the woman sound, I guess, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I would do that, not because he did. That's just what I liked and heard.
Yeah.
But VVT is another, it's a boutique amp company in Maryland that I love those amps. They're fantastic. The X40 and... Yeah, do you know Jack Pearson here in town?
Yes.
They do a signature model for Jack, and it's they're fine handmade instruments, or amps rather. And then I'm using Paul Reed Smith amps now, and Paul and I are pretty good friends.
Yeah,
that's I have an amplifier, two of them, that are quite amazing amps, and I have two prototypes at the house are kind of Dumble's. Howard Dumble is an amp builder, and these amps have become the sound of Larry Carlton, Robin Ford, Carlos Santana, and they are $50,000 and up.
Okay.
For an amp.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Paul, I've been talking to Paul Reed for a long time about building an amp with that type of sound, and it does have a very warm, fat, beautiful sound. In fact, I heard Paul playing on a video a couple of years ago with Santana.
Okay.
And he's on stage, and I'm like, wow, what is he playing through? I've never heard any of his amps sound like this, you know? And so we spoke after when I saw him at the artist party, and long story short, because I could tell you much detail, the amp is sitting at my house, and it's serial number one. It's a pretty cool story, you know?
So, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you turn into, what's his name, Nigel Tufnel?
Yes, I did. It's crazy. I have two of them now. I have a 50 watt, which is the first one, and it truly is a prototype. I mean, Paul, it's hand built. It's got holes in the where it shouldn't have holes, and it is
that
awesome.
Is crazy
Paul,
cool.
Yeah, he autographed it for me. I got serial number one. Santana got serial number two.
Stop it. Okay.
Don't tell Carlos that.
Yeah. Carlos, if you're listening, we're just kidding. You're number one. Yes. No. It's okay. That is so cool.
I won't take it out of the house. So I had Paul build a second one, and he says, you got to have a 100 watt one. So I have a 100 watt one.
Well, okay.
And and both of them have signs on them, do not touch. Do not set anything. It does.
Don't
I'm not lying.
I'm telling
I'll
you.
I'll show you a picture later.
I believe you. I'm just, all I can see is like somebody coming over and looking at that, and you're like, don't even look at it.
Yeah, don't.
Just do not even look at it.
But these amps, they sound absolutely amazing. So my new record that we'll talk about later, and I actually have two done now, were cut through those amps and through the VVTs.
Yeah.
And I used Boogie on the Latin record also. So I have all three of my favorites on there for different purposes, you know.
And that gives it, it's like a chef in a kitchen. You got different spices for different, like you want to create a certain flavor, you got this. Yeah, that's very, I love it. Coolest, probably the coolest story that has been told to me so far.
Oh, that's
awesome. I have
awesome.
To tell you, that is fantastic.
Well, from a guitar standpoint, again, I'm a Paul Reed Smith lover. I mean, I've got many of his guitars, and hopefully going to have another one here soon that I just am in love with. But and then Godin is another one of their Canadian made. And they're wonderful instruments as well.
Your go-to guitar?
I've got a Paul Reed Smith semi-hollow custom 22 that is wine-colored. I call it Chianti. Its nickname is Chianti.
Okay, go to geosa.com because the brother knows wine. We save the how can we get in touch with you, or where can we learn more? But just go to geosa.com while you're listening to this podcast. I'm telling you right now, brother knows wine.
Yeah,
love this man.
Thank you. Yeah, wine is that's my other passion. I love it. But
brought together by music and alcoholism.
Yay! So, but anyway, that's kind of my go-to. I love, but you know, I've got them all hanging up around me in the studio, and it just kind of, the mood hits me. I go, I haven't played you in a while, and I'll pull them down. And you know, it really depends on what I'm searching for, and sometimes I'm not searching for anything. It just comes to me. Most of the time, that's what happens.
Okay, I'm just going to go on record. You have the coolest life ever. We're just gonna close it down right now.
I'm a blessed man.
You are a blessed man.
I truly don't take it for granted. I don't.
You truly are. So you have sat in the producer's chair on occasion. That's got to be okay for a singer to listen to other singers. It is very difficult. Because I'm a heart singer. I mean, you train technically, but you still, you know.
Absolutely.
So being that heart player, when you are working in the production end of things, what are you looking for? I guess it just varies from artist to artist, but when you're bringing in a guitar player, if you're not playing and you're like, okay, I want to bring in somebody, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for the same thing that I'm looking for what I want to hear. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to feel something.
Okay.
And if that's, I don't care what your instrument is. Mm-hmm. I've produced sax players, mm-hmm. trumpet players, vocalists, guitarists. I've done most everything.
Yeah.
Cellist.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I'm looking for you to move me. I don't care how many notes you play or how fast you can play them.
Will you be my friend forever?
If that's not what it's called for, and it's not going to touch people's heart, mm-hmm. that's what sells music.
Yeah.
And if
so
not,
right.
That's what should be selling music.
Well, so. Okay, that's a whole other
conversation. That's a whole other story,
whole other
we're
conversation.
Not going to go there today.
That's a rabbit trail we could go down.
Is.
That's all. We can come back, we'll talk about that another time. Well, let's talk about the stuff that, not only the stuff that you've worked on. I am not wearing my reading glasses. That's why I've got it over here by the light. You've got 7 albums to your credit, or 8? Are you working on number 8?
I have 7 out, and the 8th one is coming this
August.
Year.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that in a
second.
Right. But of the 7 that are out right now, which of the albums do you feel, or which of the albums do you feel like you are at your most authentic as a communicator, as a player?
That's a nice question.
I'm a singer. We come up with them.
That's a tough one to answer because as an artist, you grow and change.
Yeah, because when you think about, forgive me for interrupting, but when you think about all the different avenues you've been down, all the different people you've played with, I believe that it would be as easy to say for an instrumentalist such as yourself, a guitarist such as yourself, to find your voice, for lack of a better way of putting it.
No, I love the way you put it. It may be a bigger challenge.
Yeah,
because,
okay.
Because the masses like words.
True.
And I've heard that before.
True.
Oh, why don't you put some words to your songs? And some people have done that, and I have done that, actually. Mm-hmm. I sing as well, but I haven't, I didn't pursue that. You know, I felt like this was my calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a venue here in town a month or so ago, and I had a really great compliment from a lady that came up to me. And they love the show. And she goes, you know, the way you play, she says, your voice, your guitar is like a somebody singing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, that is what I want to hear from
yeah.
you. Because that's, it is my goal to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is tough to try to communicate instrumentally.
Mm-hmm.
I've had quite a few things used in TV and films mm-hmm. also, you know, and I when I was a kid, going back to those days again, mm-hmm. I got in trouble for paying attention to the music on a film in class in sixth grade.
Okay.
I remember it like it was yesterday. You know, Mr. Whitaker came up and said, you didn't hear a word they said in that. You were listening to the music. So I must have been sitting there tapping my foot or whatever,
wow.
you know. And he later came to one of my concerts, you know.
And
I got older. It was awesome.
Well, what do you have to say then?
Oh, he knew it.
Oh, he knew it. Okay.
He was a smart guy. He recognized it.
That's great. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love that. That is amazing.
It is a challenge to try to communicate melodically, you know, and... I always approach it like I'm singing it, like this is my voice, and
okay.
that's what I want, you know.
Yeah, so when you look back on your body of work so far, where does your heart, is there like I said, is there a project where you immediately go back to and you're like, ooh, that's the moment.
And my second record, Inner Voices, mm-hmm. is one of my favorite records, rather.
Yeah.
I listened to that record, and there was a lot going on in my life then. My daughter... was born, And my wife noticed a birthmark on her and said, oh, it's an angel's kiss. So there's a song there called Angel's Kiss.
Okay.
And,
you know,
And then I on, let's see, which record was it? One of my records I did. On that one, I have a song called 9 Weeks, which was to bring attention. I don't try. I stay out of politics, okay?
Right,
I really don't. I stay off of it in Facebook and everything. But I did want to bring something that's near and dear to my heart is our children. I love children. And having my first daughter, I had that ultrasound that I had recorded on a cassette. That's, you know.
Love it.
And so you have that sound of that. Underwater heartbeat. And so I took that and created a rhythm and wrote a song around it and called it 9 Weeks. And the whole song kind of feels like it's floating like this and moving, you know. And so that record, I love that record. And there's just some beautiful things on there. Chester Thompson's on there and Chris, of course. And
the great
Pat
Chris
Coyle.
Kid, yes.
You know, Pat
Coyle.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Pat just knows what to play, you know. And but that record I love. I have favorites on all of them, but that's probably one that I really am close to. And then Dreams Like This, I also, I've got some stories on that record. So,
Dreams Like This,
Bobby Hebb and all for Sonny, the song Sonny.
I can't think of a better time to hit the pause button on our conversation, so let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Denny's going to share his thoughts on playing live. He's going to talk about his brand new Latin-influenced project. He's really excited about that, as am I. And we're going to talk about his thoughts on the term smooth jazz. Plus, we got another round of Take Your Pick all coming up on the second half of our conversation with Denny Giosa. I am Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
At NashvilleGuitarStore.com, paying full price for guitars is a thing of the past. Like dial-up internet. You'll find Epiphone, Fender, Gretsch, Ibanez, Taylor, and lots more. What you won't find is the big box store prices. Get yourself a killer guitar at a fraction of the retail price at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
Music from Denny Giosa, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. We'll be talking more about his upcoming Latin-influenced project and hear just a little bit more of what that album has to offer. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to part two of our conversation with guitar great Denny Giosa. I am Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com. What do you like to play live?
Well, we end up doing Lights of the City all the time because that was my top five hit and award-winning song. Yep. So we do that, and it has evolved and changed. You know, for everybody listening out there, the records are different than when we perform live, of course. You know, and hopefully most artists are that way, or I think people are missing something.
Yeah.
But we come out, it's an energetic, fun-filled, exciting concert.
Do you prefer the ways that, like, say you've got a song live and a song studio? You are not the kind of artist who would say, we've got to play it just like the record.
Oh, no. In fact, I'm just the opposite. I'm like, listen to it, get a feel for it, and then we're going to change it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of my songs we extend live extended solos. I love to feature my great players. I have a great band. Listen, nobody, you really don't want to go just hear a guy play. I don't care what instrument or who it is. Miles Davis didn't play for an hour and a half, and it was just Miles. He gave the musicians an opportunity to speak and show their gift.
Yeah.
And I am not dumb. I surround myself with greatness.
There you go.
When I'm on stage, I have great players around me to bring my music to life.
Right.
And I'm going to let them do their thing. And it makes them happy, it makes me happy, and it makes the audience happy.
Yeah.
So it's great, you know?
When you give that latitude to your players, it allows you to rise even higher.
Oh, it does.
And let's face it, I mean, let's be honest, you are the reason that people will come to the show. But it's an added, just that little extra something when you get those that support under you to allow you, because it takes you to another place.
Well, you heard Mark mention
about
my keyboard player.
Yes, yes.
And I love hearing that. That doesn't offend me one bit.
Yeah.
I'm not threatened by that. I'm not threatened when Phil Kagi sits in with me, or it's just more music. It's just different. And the interaction, Phil and I have a blast playing together.
Right.
You know? And you're absolutely right about that. When people walk away, they may not remember my keyboard's name, but they do remember my name, because for what you said, they're coming because they know Denny's going to be there.
Yeah.
And they go, boy, that Giosa show was awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I want them to hear.
Yeah.
And listen, why shouldn't I feature these guys? They've studied their whole life just like I have.
Absolutely.
It's just a different set of breaks that have happened for both of us, you know. You understand, in the country and pop world, it's just different, I think. You know, there are two songs that have to happen in the show.
Yeah.
One of them is Lights of the City, and I mentioned that.
Right,
right. The other one is Santana's Europa.
I love Europa!
I have taken that song. I recorded that song.
Oh, wait. On which album?
That is on Body to Body.
Okay,
right. And I did it a different way. I did it with a Wes Montgomery jazz guitar, upright bass, and drums, and it's just very open and beautiful, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it gets a ton of airplay.
Yeah.
A ton of airplay.
Yeah.
People are all the times texting me with a picture of their radio that says Denny Giosa Europa. You know, I wish I was getting paid for that. But yeah. Carlos is.
Yeah, Carlos is making bank.
But, you know, it's still a song. It's one of those songs that moves me.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs I have to do.
Yeah.
And I played it at the Music City Jazz Festival, and I did it on... I changed it up again. I had to do something new to it. So I'm playing it on that Godin nylon string.
Yeah.
And then we get to the end of it, and I'm jamming out on my PRS, you know, and just blowing the doors off. So, and without a doubt, Mercy, it's a standing ovation every time. We closed the show out with it right before Foreplay came on. You know, standing ovation.
Where was I? Oh, I know where I was. I was in New York.
Yes, you were.
I was in New York. I'm like, where was I? Oh. Okay, so let's talk about the moniker Smooth Jazz. I wanted to know your thoughts on it. Does it aid or hinder your art?
When I first hit, that title didn't exist. It was New Adult Contemporary, NAC, and that's where my records were played. And we could send them the album. It wasn't singles-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And I should preface by saying, anyone listening, I mean no disrespect by any of this conversation about smooth jazz. I love it, you know, and I love the artist in
it.
It has its place. Mm-hmm. But I think that just like everything, the business got involved, and I think it hurt the music some. I think it hurt some of the artists and how we were allowed to express.
Mm-hmm.
If you played above the 12th fret on the guitar, some of the radio guys would make comments about that.
Wow.
Because the music had turned into something that they wanted in offices and
In elevators,
relaxation,
and
they didn't want to draw attention to it. They didn't want you to really be featured as an artist. I didn't feel any way, you know. And so, when I'd go out live, that's why we started really just cutting loose.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole other experience. But
I remember when I was a member. Note the rabbit ears of the Columbia Records, where you got like 45 records for a penny. And most of the albums that I liked were like Wyndham, in the Wyndham series, and Anita Baker, and heaven help me, Kenny G. And I loved like Larry Carlton and David Minwan. I'm trying to think of who else, but it was just all in that vein. And I never even thought about the idea of Smith. It was jazz to me.
It was jazz to me too.
Yeah, it was
you know,
jazz to me.
And you know, with the early records of Lee Ritenour and Larry, and that's what inspired me to want to do this music. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I wanted to play that. I didn't want to make records based on a format, if that makes sense. I wanted to play instrumental music with some jazz things in thrown in the, you know, it's a mixture. I mean, you listen to my music, it is a mixture of, there's straight ahead in there, there's smooth in there, there's, you know,
and I get
cinematic
what you mean.
In there.
Yeah.
It's a mixture. So to me, it's music is music, you know, and I sometimes don't like the titles that we all like to stick on it.
I'm with you. And then that's why I wanted to ask you that, because I felt like I said, growing up and when I was able to purchase, well, I've been purchasing my own music since I was old enough to own a radio and I was like six. Mm. But when I listened to all those things, to me, it was like, it may not have been the same kind of jazz my grandfather listened to because it was a different era, but what is? But to me, it was still jazz. To me, it still moved me. It's
music
still,
should grow. It should change. Yeah. It should evolve.
Yeah.
And for us to be, to think that the only jazz that truly exists is Coltrane. If you don't like Coltrane, you're not a real jazz player. I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's fair.
What is fair in this life?
Well,
but I just don't think that that's. I think that it's contradictory to the form. Jazz mm-hmm. is experimenting. It's open. It should be.
Yeah.
You know, inspired to be creative.
It's. I think it's kind of like nature. It changes every day.
It does, and I think that I think there's different styles of jazz. I mean,
just like there's different styles of gospel, there's different styles of country, there's different styles.
That's right.
I think that's probably the biggest misconception that people have with the genre itself. They just kind of lump all jazz into two categories. You're either Bird and Coltrane or you're Kenny G. You know what I mean? And I hate to keep saying his name, but let's face it, his name is synonymous with smooth, just like Yanni is new age. You know, it's just like there are certain artists that are synonymous with a moniker. And I always wondered, actually, as I was delving into your music in preparation for our time together, I was like, I wanted to know, what are your thoughts? And that's a very, it's such a fresh perspective. I think that people need to just kind of be ready for the expansion.
Here's a great story.
Yeah.
Okay. I was in a Dallas airport and had a flight change there. Mm-hmm. And I was grabbing one of those little pizzas and I'm sitting there having. And I've got my guitar bag with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the one bag I use is from Levy's. Mm-hmm. And it looks like an alligator skin. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's red. And it definitely people
cool.
notice this bag mm-hmm. when I carry it to the airport. And I was sitting next to a couple and we were talking.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, that's a great looking guitar case. And we talked about that. And they said, so what do you do? And I was telling them while I'm shoving pizza down, looking at my watch. You know? And I said, what do you do? Well, we own a tile company in Texas and mm-hmm. we do flooring, you know, beautiful tiles and stuff. I said, oh, that's cool. I said, do you guys like jazz? Oh, not really. Not really fans. And I said, oh, well, here. I gave him a CD anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, you know, it makes a great coaster if you don't like it. And of course, they love that.
Yeah.
But and I never heard anything from them, and I didn't expect to.
Mm-hmm.
But about 3 months later, I get an email,
mm-hmm.
and they are thanking me for the CD. And they said, we want you to know that a week after we met you, that our son had passed away suddenly, and that your music gave us solace and peace when we listened to it, and we love your music. And that really touched me. And if that wasn't a God thing, nothing is, that I handed that to them in that
And that's
moment.
The whole point.
That's the whole point.
Who inspires you now?
Well, my kids inspire me a
lot. How many kids do you have?
I have three. And, you know, I'd do anything for them.
Yeah.
You know, but they've always inspired me. A lot of the titles of the songs came from when they were young and, you know, and they'd say things and like, that's a great song title. yeah, and musically, you know, I still listen to Wes Montgomery and Pat Martino and Jeff Beck inspires me, Santana. I you know, and they're not all guitar players. I just appreciate great music.
Yeah.
I can be inspired.
That is so cool. So you've got, as we talked about earlier, we've got your eighth album, which is coming out, and is there anything you can clue us into? I mean, we're going to have a little, you're going to give me a little snippet.
So, yes, I will.
But what is most exciting about this new project?
This new project, I am probably most excited about this over anything I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working on it for couple 3 years now.
Really?
A long time, yeah.
Okay.
And it is a Latin driven record. It's all Latin rhythms,
mm-hmm.
pretty
mm-hmm.
much. And I use some of the greatest players here in town, you know, and they're the guys that play with me.
I love
Glenn Caruba on percussion and Ray Massey on drums, Kenny Zerger on keyboards, and Keith Kenyon on bass. There is one track on there where I went back and grabbed from a previous record a song that Chester and Chris played on. Chester Thompson and Chris played on, and kind of dedicating that to Chris's memory. And but I replayed it. And I added horns to it, remixed it, and remastered it, etc. So it's much more energetic. Kenny put a new B3 part on there, and it's wonderful. But the whole record is very high energy. There's only a couple of ballads on there, and they are gorgeous. They are gorgeous ballads. But the other songs, it's unlike anything you've ever heard from me. You know, in fact, I had one music guy who's a marketing guy listen to the record, and he said, "This is a whole new sound. You've created like a new sound." He says, "You have to market this as such." He said, "I've never heard anything like this before."
What's the name of the album?
It is called Mueva Tu Cuerpo, which means move your body. Excuse me, move your body.
Oh,
Yeah, Mueva Tu Cuerpo. So it is, like I said, it's a four on the floor. There's a few of the songs have this four on the floor with all these Latin rhythms and tons of percussion. I have a horn section on it. The great Holly Ferris, it was with James Brown for, he played with him for 25 years. And Roy Agee on trombone, you know Roy, I'm sure, with Prince, and it was with Prince. And John Santos, you know John Santos?
I know John Santos,
John's a percussionist.
Yeah.
Here's a great story. Can I tell another story? Do I have time?
Yes.
So John, I sing, but I don't sing in Spanish. And I wanted a certain voice on this song, and Kenny and I had written this song called Freedom Tower.
Okay.
And that is about the tower in Miami that the Cubans came through, kind of like their Ellis Island.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we wrote this song, and it's a very upbeat, you know, great song with lyrics. Mm-hmm. And we had Kate Ray and Rachel Rodriguez come in and sing on it too. Mm-hmm. And so we called John Santos to play some percussion on it. And I said, "John, why don't you sing this for us?" So he ends up singing it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all done.
Yeah.
John walks in the control room and sits down. He goes, just very matter of fact, he goes, "You know, I came through the Freedom Tower when I was a little boy with my parents." And I went, "You're just now telling me this?
Really?
Yeah, and you're here singing this song now?" What is wrong with this picture?
That's fantastic.
So, isn't that a great story?
That is fantastic.
So we're going to do a little video interview with John, and I may give you a little snippet of that song, even if you want to hear that. You know,
hey.
But we want Miami to know about this song.
Bring it.
Yeah. So we will. But I just think that's a great story.
That is amazing. So what's next for you? I mean, you've got the album,
I have one more story. Can I tell yet another story?
Please, go ahead.
This is a great story, too, because here I am. You know, I just finished working on Phil Keaggy's record.
Yes.
And Phil was stopped by my studio to return a pedal or something I had loaned him. And I'm in there working on a mix on one of my songs for this new Latin record.
Yeah.
And Phil grabs my Godin classical guitar and starts dancing around the control room playing, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, "This is great music. I want to play on your record." I said, "Sit down."
Holy cow.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
No. So, I said,
"Okay, he just stops by, returns the pedal, plays on my record. Blah, 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 blah." Whatever.
So, yeah, whatever. So, you know, I made a spot for Phil and gave him a solo, and I said, "Okay, here you go." And so we took off and did it. But here's the cool thing.
Yeah.
Out of the 11 songs on this record, that particular day, he stopped by and loved the song and played on this song. The name of that song is A Dance in Heaven. And for those that might not know Phil is very well known and respected, not only by the guitar community, but the Christian community and Christian music. And He's an amazing musician, and if you don't know him, you need to
please
you
Phil Keaggy, K-E-A-G-G-Y.
The man should be a household name.
Seriously, you are not kidding.
No, I love him to death. But anyway, he played on that, and so what are the odds of him choosing that song?
That song.
It wasn't him choosing that song. It
oh
was,
my goodness!
You know.
So, just a few more questions, then we're going to get to the fun part of the interview. How would you personally define success?
For me, you know, sometimes you have to get older to appreciate and realize the definition or the answer to that question, mm-hmm. I think. And I look back and I kind of discuss daily my frustrations with the business side mm-hmm. of being involved in music. It's mm-hmm. not an easy road to go.
Yes.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of luck and hard work and being in the right place at the right time. And a lot of people have managed to do that, and mm-hmm. God bless them. It's mm-hmm. great. Longevity to me and doing something that keeps you content mm-hmm. inside is success.
Yeah.
My three children are my greatest success.
There you go.
Because they've all graduated. They're in college, and they're just that's it.
They like you. They're talking to you.
Well, some days they like me. but to be able to, I have taken care of my family and raised my kids playing music.
Yes.
My wife has resigned from her job at Vanderbilt mm-hmm. when we had our first child and hasn't worked since, and that was a few years back.
Wow.
I feel completely blessed, and I feel like that is success. Yes. Am I where I'd like to be? Not yet, but I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
But just to be able to sit down and play guitar, be healthy.
Yeah.
And have a beautiful family. That's success. You know.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, we know. I know personally that we can find you on certain aspects of social media, Facebook. I tend to Facebook stalk you. I hope that doesn't creep you out too much, but. It's just how I
maybe
roll.
A little okay. Security.
All right. But you do you Instagram and all that other stuff, or are you like the rest of us old people and just do Facebook?
I'm starting. I've got Instagram. I've got I forget what the other one is.
Twitter.
Yeah. I do that, but I don't know how to use it like I should. I mean, my kids know how to use it, but I Facebook a lot.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That seems to get the word. And you've got your fabulous website. JIOSA, Giosa.
Yeah.
.com. Mm-hmm. What is your background?
That is Italian, originally spelled with a G.
That's what I was just going to ask that.
Yeah, originally spelled with a G, and it's one of those names that got changed mm-hmm. somehow, you mm-hmm. know. But yeah, G-I-O-I-O-S-A, Giosa.
Giosa, yeah.
Was really what it was, and then it was shortened to G-I-O-S-A, then somewhere along the line, J-I-O-S-A. But
J-I-O-S-A, that's what you need to remember, the spelling, to go to his website, to see all of his wonderful albums, to read his wine blog, to just know this. You need to know this man. And I'm excited about this new project coming out, and I guarantee you, as little as I dance, I am so looking forward to this project coming out to enjoy.
It will make you feel good. I guarantee
that's really what matters,
make
baby.
You feel good, and there are those moments where it's going to be reflective and beautiful too. You
fantastic.
Know, there's a couple of songs on there. That,
fantastic. So. Well, the artist is Denny Giosa, and now comes the fun part of it. As if this wasn't fun.
It
come
was
on,
fun.
We've had fun.
Yes.
All right, now is called. It's time for our what I like to call our audio Rorschach test. This is don't overthink this. This is called
uh-oh.
Take Your Pick. Get it? Take your pick.
I got that.
Get
right away.
Okay, sorry.
What's a drummer when you need one?
You get it, but yeah, not me. Just this or that, you just tell me which one. Beatles or Stones?
Beatles.
Strings, 10s or 11s?
10, 9s.
Oh! Oh, ladies and gentlemen, that's called the Take Your Pick Zinger.
Yeah. Yeah,
he snuck 9s in
I
there.
Did.
Yeah, there you go. Peanut butter, smooth or chunky?
Smooth.
Ooh, this is an interesting one given our conversation. Amps, Fenders, or Marshalls?
Fenders.
Okay. Play live or studio?
Live.
Toilet paper, over or under?
Oh my goodness, soft.
Fantastic. We just, okay. We're just going to take that. That's actually, okay. that is the correct answer.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, 4 a.m., get up or go to bed?
Oh, go to bed.
That's my man. Well, okay, let's see. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Mm-hmm, you better answer chocolate. The listener's like, I don't know why she said that.
Yeah,
all right,
well.
Look at my picture. All right, anyway, Batman or Superman?
Oh, Batman.
There you go. And finally, your bonus question. What is your ultimate road trip album?
Ultimate road trip album is We Live Here, Pat Metheny.
Yes. Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are so incredibly honored to have you here. Thank you so much for taking time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It wasn't too painful, was it?
Not one bit. I'll come back anytime.
Oh, thank you very much. We'll have you play in studio next time.
All right.
That'd be great.
I want to thank you, Marcia, for having me here today, and thank NashvilleGuitarStore.com for having me. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Dedicated to bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. To hear more, subscribe to the Nashville Guitar Store podcast in iTunes. Go to NashvilleGuitarStore.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram.